Let me record it. I'm running.
Bill, how about next month at the Playland?
Yeah, so. Call this meeting of the Public Works Parks Labor and Transportation Committee to order, Monday, October 4th. We have no minutes yet before us on our last meeting that we can take a look at for approval, so we'll defer that. One important item of discussion, I kind of cleared the deck today of other items, and of course the clock is running on our Playland recommendations and input piece. But I've cleared the deck today. We've got Mike Hagan in, who was president of the Westchester County Department of Public Safety Police Benevolent Association. And what we like to do, obviously, is call in our union leaders and have them give us just a general update as to how things are going on with the uniformed services, and alert us to any issues that starting to surface, if there are any, and anything else that we think is, you know, timely that we could get into, so we could at least advise the board on the matter of our oversight responsibilities and our relationship with county police. So it's good to see you.
Thank you.
What's going on? We're at the, what, two-thirds mark, I guess, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's all, with us, it's pretty much, you know, business as usual. You know, the police always find a way to get the job done regardless of, you know, how the budget reflects on us. And, you know, I know throughout the year, through attrition, we've downsized a bit. They've taken a handful of detectives, I think at last blush it was 11 or 12, and reassigned them down to the roads to try to eliminate some of the overtime.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So the detectives upstairs all have increased workloads.
Wow.
Can I ask something important? Your contract, I mean, can that be done administratively? Is there some kind of contract issues with that? Can they reassign people like that?
Yeah, no, I mean, as far as administratively, there's no contract violations by doing that unless they were to take them and put them down and tell them you're a police officer again. As long as they want to continue to pay them the detective rate, the rank or the assignment that they earn, there's no promise to what actual work they give them.
So they keep their rank and their salaries on it. Just
right,
doing.
Yeah, they keep the detectives not rank. It's an assignment. But they keep their detective status. Right. They go down the road, and then as their need, you know, as the department needs them, they'll bring them back up as they, you know, as I guess in attrition within the detective ranks.
So they can put them on the street in the car, whatever they need to do.
Yes, and I mean. Throughout the year, if there's a special detail, say, for instance, you know, the president was in the area, and I guess he came through the airport, you know, if you have a detail like that, they'll assign people as needed from whatever division, wherever they are. So, yeah, they can put them on the street, they can put them in a detail, but in this case, they've taken them from their permanent assignment as a detective, say, in the warrants unit, in a patrol car.
Detectives normally don't wear uniforms, right? Can they put them on the forcibly put on the uniform?
Sure, that's what they do. They put on the uniform.
That's what I thought.
They put on the uniform and they go out on patrol. And that's what's been going on this year, you know. But there's no complaint by us. We understand there's some fiscal problems. We understand that that's their effort to try to curb overtime. You know, we're trying to work with the administration to try to get to the numbers that they want to get to in order to, you know, we're doing our part to try to get them in line with spending where they want to be.
The overall complement of the entire union across the board, so that's you're down this year in 2010 and the numbers you were running in 2009?
Yeah, I believe we were somewhere in the two I-270s, I believe, were down 10 to 11 positions.
Really?
There's talk of, with the consolidation with Ossining, some of those positions being filled by the overlap of the Ossining people who were being brought in.
Yeah.
You know, like, if the Ossining contract calls for 12 police officers and we take 15, so three of those unfilled positions will now be filled.
Yeah.
You know, but the other eight, I don't know what the plans are for that. And
that's one of the ones I'm not.
It seems as if right now, the way that they're filling those in is having the detectives work road patrol and having the rest of the detective division pick up the increased workload.
Court.
Just, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I know you were here all day today. Any viewpoints, any comments on the consolidation efforts?
I'm in favor of it because, I mean, basically, you know, we're the Department of Public Safety, 280 or so, you know, 270 or so employees. There are no fire, you know, there's no firemen in Westchester County. So this is really about administrative consolidation in order to realize savings, which to me would keep cops on the street more than it would keep any other, you know, would do anything else. So, you know, there may be a janitor who's not held on. There may be a couple of, as I look through it, a couple of administrative type positions that are eliminated. And as a result, they're going to realize savings, and that overall savings, I think, is going to keep equipment and police officers on the street. You know, those, instead of eliminating, I have no idea how far the attrition is going to go, but if they can realize their savings through administrative costs, savings, then to me, it's a no-brainer. Let's keep the public safety aspect, you know, in sight and keep the police officers on the street. And, you know, I know that there are some, I saw a piece of paper that was supposedly put forth by some firemen with some concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most of them seem to be addressed by the addendum as far as the administrative questions. And then the other stuff just seems to be, well, I don't want police being in charge of everything. You know, I'm not sure how firemen throughout the county are going to be affected by, you know, it's not going to affect their bottom line, but it is going to affect our bottom line.
In terms of, and I know we're going to be meeting later this week, so I'm going to have some further conversations, but... maybe just on this whole dispatching issue, some concerns. Do you see some of the firefighters, I guess, say, well, police don't understand, you know, roll engines and ladders, don't let, you know, and they don't understand, you know, yours. Like, is that a legitimate issue, or can training solve that, or is that just something that shouldn't be mixed together?
And you're, I have the background to kind of answer it because I was in charge of the communications unit for 3 or 4 years. Before I became the president. And, you know, I worked with DES on some programs which were like, we put together within our command post, we had a unit put in there so we could have intercommunications with, you know, other departments. And, you know, DES has the same unit, you know. But basically, when it comes to the communications part, you know, police dispatchers and fire dispatchers are separate. You're never going to have a police dispatcher also doing fire stuff. I don't see any scenario where that happens. But that's not to say that they can't be within the same center so that they can share information a little bit more free. You know, there's a better free flow of the information. So let's just say the police department, and I heard a scenario today about a pursuit that went up the sawmill or something and wound up on the bridge, the guy jumps in. Well, if the fire guys are over here dispatching fire and the police are over here dispatching police, they become aware that the police officers are chasing someone and he just wound up jumping off the bridge, well, they know when the fire guys are going, hey, listen, this is a criminal. Maybe you just did a burglary, maybe you just did an armed robbery, whatever it is. But when they're totally separate, you know what I mean? That communication's not there. There is a bit of a disconnect. So I don't think that, you know, and that's not to say also that this guy today couldn't do that tomorrow. I don't see that probably happening because there's like 6 or 8 months of training that goes into putting a police dispatcher because there's just a different aspect of the way that they dispatch. But there would be a lot of savings in the call takers. So like we have a call taker working, maybe they have a call taker or two call takers. You know, maybe that could be brought down to one call taker or what do you have? And then you send it either to the police side or the fire side, or you let them both know at the same time.
So can I send that? So because I guess I should know this. There's like the initial call comes into like a central switchboard, a call taker, and that person goes police or fire. I thought the calls went straight to the police or fire, but there's a
what
you call like a call taker. There's someone in the middle,
little man.
See, no, it doesn't work so much like that.
Okay.
Like, I don't know that 60 Control gets any 911 calls. The 911 call is going to go to it's called the PSAP.
The local PSAP. That goes to the local police department, the PSAP.
Right. It's going to go to PSAP. So anything that's on, like if you're at the airport, you pick up a phone and dial 911, it's going to go to us. You know, it's not going to go to fire control. It'll come to us.
But if it's a call in Harrison, the Harrison Police Department,
gets
that call. And, right. then they would send it someplace.
Call 60 Control and say, I need an ambulance or I need a fire truck or whatever it is.
Okay.
You know, and then they, in turn, will call. I mean, I don't want to talk about their operation. Like, they can tell you how they go about it, but, like, they can call. Well, like, so if we're on an accident on a sawmill and we need an ambulance, we call headquarters, and headquarters calls fire control and says, we need an ambulance, we need fire engines, we have a person pinned in the car.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is that we have, call 60 Control, let them know, and then 60 Control will dispatch the appropriate, apparatus or so. But call takers, definitely, that can definitely be combined, that service. And, you know, if they have two, I don't know how many they have as far as call takers, and we have one or whatever, that can be combined. And whether or not they cross-train the guys, I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to be with Mike later, so this meeting isn't set up for that purpose. We want us to come back to the union issue. So So right now, the contract that's open is what, 09 and 010, or just 2010? Or
09 and 10.
Oh, that is open. And obviously, you're in negotiations now.
What happened was we came back with our award, I believe it was right around March, and then Corrections was right behind us, and I believe SOA just got there, the superior officers over Corrections, and usually the DA's investigators trail right in behind there. So, like, in order for us to be able to move forward, we have to see how the other line, you know, how they, because they're all pretty much, basically, if you read the award that Corrections got, they said, okay, we gave it to the county police, so we're giving it to you.
This is the mandatory, this was the arbitration award?
The arbitration that Corrections just got.
Okay.
And then the arbitration that Corrections superior officers got. And then usually what happens is, you know, I can't speak to how it will happen this time, but usually then the DA's investigators will not go to arbitration. They'll just usually walk, say, hey, you want to sign on to this, and they'll do it as an agreement.
So going forward, so in theory, you're in negotiations now. I mean, does it always go to mandatory arbitration, or do sometimes
it doesn't have to, but it just seems to be.
Usually goes that way, is that?
Especially now, I mean, you know, there seems to be a little bit of public sentiment against public employees, so I don't see that the demands, you know, by the administration are going to be what we would deem as reasonable. So, you know, that's when I'd be more than happy to come up with a reasonable, award or contract. You know, when I hear some of the public sentiment, I hear, you know, just the rhetoric of the administration, you know, and I don't hold anything against it, but it's just the way it is. I say, you know, some people say, you know, that we get paid too much, that we need to pay into our medical. I think that it's part of an overall package that everyone needs to look at.
And from the arbiters, you think are a little more immune from maybe some of the public.
The arbiters, they look at it and they just give a fair assessment. And you know, you can lose in an arbitration. From my point of view, you can lose in an arbitration too. I mean, a couple of years ago, you know, the whole 207C issue. You know, they were awarded to us a whole different 207C package, which greatly affected our members. But you know, we understood that that's what they got, and you know, we moved forward with it.
That's corrections got them.
So corrections got it, and then they awarded them the corrections. What the corrections, whatever it's called, Article 20 for corrections.
And I'm not, you know, I don't want to get in the middle of the negotiations, but I'm just curious if you can answer it. In terms of, because as the administration's about to come out with their budget, have they put anything on the table that you need to try to hit a certain number, or you're facing layoffs? I mean, is that kind of thing?
As I said, with all of those other things, waiting for those awards to come out, we haven't actually formally sat down yet. You know, we've developed our demands. I'm sure that they've spoken. And their, Toomey, Mr. Toomey?
Right. Yeah.
I guess he's been...
But no one said you could have to even lose 10 lines if you don't come up with something.
Nobody's told me anything yet. I have no official communication yet.
So this is your contract is what, 3 years?
2 years. Two years is the most that an arbitrator can award.
Right. Okay. All right. So it's a 2 year contract, and it's a calendar year contract for 2009 and 2010.
That's what they, 08 was, they're good through 08.
They were good through 08. So. And this was for...
We resolved...
9 and 10.
We resolved...
7 and 8.
7
open,
and 8.
9 and 10
March,
is open.
It was 7 and 8 that the March award...
The March award was for 7 and 8. The arbitrator issued that award, and now we'll have to move forward for 9 and 10.
Wow.
So if we're doing a budget for 2011, I guess the goal is nice to put 9, 10 to bed, so in the 11 budget we sort of know where the numbers are, right?
So, okay. I follow you. Then it was after that there was a progression where the award for correction and so
right,
on.
Then they had to get their 7 and 8 award.
Yeah.
As did the SOA and the district attorney investigators, I do not believe that they're...
Yeah, right.
It's Larry and Andy's work very fast.
See, I tell you, you forget how far back...
Yeah.
Mike,
you're negotiating, and you're up to, you're already.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know. So the talks right now are for 9 and 10. Okay, all right. Some of the things that have come up in the past that we've been concerned about, and it's the investment of resources into vehicles and equipment, and. I know that this committee, we haven't had an opportunity to talk about that this year, but just generally, things okay with the fleet and the equipment being made available to the police?
I think there was some good foresight. Whenever the last, I'm not sure which administration actually did, but there was a little foresight in ordering a few extra of the Crown Victorias, knowing that they were going to be going out of production. So, you know, then you never really know what the good next car is. So, from what I understand, there's a decent stock of those cars that they'll be able to continue to put out. And they do keep them in good shape. We do have our garage there. You know, Public Works works on the cars right there. So our guys can, you know, if there's a problem with the car, they can, they can have it worked on right away.
Yeah.
I think it is important to make sure that we always, especially on these parkways, you know, going at higher rates of speed, whether it's because we're chasing or pursuing a violator or we're trying to get to a somewhere. I mean, our cars need to really be in good shape because, you know, one malfunction of the car, and that's why I'm dressed like this today. I'm out at Playland for the month, basically, doing driver training.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, we're this for 2 weeks. We'll be doing the second half of our department. Then we'll have the recruits, and then I think the town of Bedford is going to do some training with us.
Mm-hmm.
So, in that same vein, making sure that we that you know they run the department through the EVOC, which is Emergency Vehicle Operators Course.
Mm-hmm.
Going through that to get a refresher is really a good idea. I'm glad that you know they were able to do it. But the cars, if they're not, if the cars aren't in good shape, you know, you're bound to have some kind of a malfunction, which can be, you know, it can have real, you know, fatal repercussions, you know.
Yeah.
Can I ask Mr. Chairman just about the equipment in the car? I mean, what the cars that you all have, the computers?
Yeah, we're very happy.
You have video, do you have videos?
We have everything, like a little cockpit in there. Mm-hmm. They got the track system, which, you know, does the... ticketing. There's radar. There's you know the computer units that link up to headquarters. There's plate readers that we have in some of the cars. I don't know that the low jack is all that popular anymore, but that's in some of the cars. I mean, mm-hmm. some of the cars you get in and they're pretty much loaded with stuff. But I do have a safety committee through the union. If we see any problems, if we see any issues, we try to address them, and the department's been really responsive, making sure that you know the cars are in good shape, the cars are properly equipped, and we're very satisfied with that.
The what was it, 3 years ago, they introduced, when they start to integrate the chargers into the fleet?
They did. The chargers are mostly for detective use or plane closure. There are two chargers that are for special enforcement. Those have the bigger engine in them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they bought a few just to try out on the roads, and they're still out there.
Yeah.
That was more of a fleet management issue, whether or not they would hold up. You know, that's that's that issue that I talked about with ordering the extra cars. We know the Crown Victorias hold up real well.
Yeah.
Whether or not the chargers hold up, that's a fleet management issue. But if they don't hold up and the cars go out of service, and then we have to wind up, you know, taking, you know, backup cars.
Mm-hmm.
Those cars usually aren't in as good shape. So we'd like to have, you know, cars, you know, the newer cars out on the roads especially. You know, some of the older cars wind up going to the airport or somewhere where, they don't have to work at a high performance capacity.
Mark. Question came up recently about actions in the local courts. This, you know, the state troopers no longer in a position of doing pleas. They're there to prosecute and testify, and they can't negotiate. What's the status of county police? Is there county police in the local courts? Can you negotiate a plea? Are you? Is it like the state police? You're there and the local council, someone else has to, like, do the pleas?
It depends on the court and the judge. You know, like, if the judge has a full calendar and he'll come in and say, listen, you guys, you know.
Go back there and work something out.
Yeah, I'd like you to work out a plea bargain and bring the ones in front of me that,
so there's no
edict of a village attorney or something.
Right, but there's no edict. The state superintendent made edict, no more pleas on, you know, state troopers.
It was my understanding that that was a tactic, that they did to try to realize some kind of cost saving somewhere. Yeah.
That's why I was just curious if the same kind of edict that the county would not. So if the locality encourages you or asks the county police to kind of work out something with the person,
we always do that. And the one difference between when we were 10 years ago, let's say, is that, and I guess in order to keep the guys out on the road, a lot of times they will send one officer over to try to see if they can, do the pleas. And then if someone doesn't want to, then they'll bring the other officers in. You know what I mean? But they'll, you know, in some of the courts, like I know Harrison or Greenberg or somewhere, you'll have a large quantity or just a large number of stuff. You go over, one guy will go over there, talk to them, you know, try to work out whatever kind of plea deals, and then they don't work out, then whatever officer needs to go over and do the testing.
Yeah, and I met with the DA's office recently because the question came up to try, what can we do something? And I know at the local state, sometimes the local police chief apparently is delegated the authority to
negotiate so all the officers can stay out, or the chief delegates one. There's one officer that does that, but the county also, you see, sometimes one officer is
the district attorney never usually ever gets involved in the local.
Right, we were trying to see the good, but right, they don't. Yeah, it's like Gordon says, the local, there's a local village attorney or town attorney.
Right,
or
sometimes towns like, I'm not sure if it still is, if it's been a while since I've
been. But the same, all the cops coming in that delegate one officer or the chief to handle all the cases, unless someone wants a trial.
East Chester will have the town attorney handle it, and then if the town attorney can't come up with a resolution with a plea deal, then I guess they put it on for another date for trial.
Okay, but you're surprised you can do it. It's not like the state troopers. You can, if it works out right, you can do it. Okay.
Mike, you know that each year part of the plan for police deployment and utilization involves the public safety, police presence, security needs of Playland. Of course, the department is compensated by Playland as a cost center for the work that's done down there. What's the union's viewpoint of Playland as, I'm going to refer to it as a post. I don't know if there's multiple posts at Playland, but just as a post, because the one thing that's a little bit different about Playland for those of us that aren't police officers is that. There may be one or more officers assigned to Playland, but there's also the seasonal use of the special officer, and that's been a practice that's been been going on for a long time. But can you give us maybe a more accurate picture as to what we're actually utilizing or what we're actually doing down there with the assistance of regular county police and the use of summer specials?
Yeah, well, this is another one I think I have actually a little bit of background that I can answer. A long time ago, I was a special. I was attending Iona College, and for 2 years I did the seasonal special thing, but at the time we were armed, and we were dressed pretty much exactly, we looked like a regular county police officer. It's just within the patch, and it didn't say police. That was about the only difference that you'd be able to tell.
Armed with a gun?
Armed with a firearm, yes. And we would, we would go through firearms training, Article 35 training. I want to say it was probably two weeks of training.
That's scary.
So they stopped that, and with that, there used to be the complement of what they would call specials. Now they call them seasonal park rangers in the park, and then you would have, like, one police officer there. So through the years, for whatever reason, they decided to go away from that, and they have these seasonal park rangers, which are basically, unarmed. I'm not even sure what their ability is to write summonses. I really never delved too deep into what their powers are in the penal law, but they use them, and as a result, in some instances, especially in Playland, knowing that they don't have as many armed police, as much armed police presence, or people to back each other up, they increase the number of police officers in the department. So, I'm pretty satisfied with the amount of police officers that are in the park because the upper management has taken into consideration, and say if it's a busy weekend, they'll hire a couple more. But you definitely need more than the one police officer because if anything happens, you have to have backup. Now they utilize bike patrol in there. The seasonal park rangers are there. They're pretty good. They're well trained. As far as just trying to keep the peace, and then if anything big happens, they call for the police officers to come over. So it's been a pretty good mix. Sometimes I tend to think that they're used in areas where they're not properly supervised, like there's no real police officer there, and to tell you the truth, I think it's more dangerous or more of an issue for them than it is for me, because I'm having done it when I was a kid, mm-hmm. or when I was a young man, seeing them there by themselves having to handle something without a police officer around, I think it's kind of a little bit unfair. Now. I don't see any major labor issues as a result.
Although it was, it was thrown around this table from time to time, but we all did understand that there was a reason why the county got involved with the mounted unit, and we're beyond that. But I'm just curious, just from the take of the actual officers who work each day. Are we losing anything today with respect to either parks, handling our parks, especially the wooded rural parts of some of our parkland, and also to the extent that the mounted patrol was used in crowd control? Are we losing anything today by not having that unit?
Well, having the mounted unit is always good in crowd control situations. The argument that it was too expensive, the argument that we didn't need it, it's not something that there are more pressing issues. So
yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and say, we should have had that mounted unit, it should have stayed. Listen, it's a decision that has to be made at the top, and at the top,
right,
they want it. I'm not going to sit here and try to fight for it. It is a good tool. There's no better tool in crowd control situations than the mounted unit. It also, to me, had some... public relations.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loves a nice shiny red fire truck.
Yeah, right.
Pretty much nothing else that anyone wants to see the police for, except for let me pet your horse. That's
So, what's relied upon now going into some of our wooded park area? What do you guys rely on now?
ATVs, aviation can do a little work there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that we have any. Any other kind of dirt bikes or anything. There were some 50-year-old dirt bikes in the garage, but I don't think they tried.
We didn't go from horses to donkeys or something.
We do have some, some Harleys, but you're not going to use them off-road. But they have some ATVs. They have some the Gators,
What's a Gator?
The Gators, those John Deere, like the six-wheel ones.
Okay.
Have you ever seen them at, you'll see them at at big kind of like parks events. You'll see the parks department guys taking cones around and stuff.
Okay.
So they have a couple of those Gators.
All right. Is there any issue we can start to plow into for you? I mean, is anything that we can be of immediate help to you on? That?
I mean, as far as the department side, I mean, the commissioner, the deputy commissioner, the upper management has been pretty much very responsive to our needs, as far as equipment, as far as deploying manpower. I have no complaints about anything that's going on. Like I say, putting the detectives downstairs, and I don't like to see it, but I haven't been over here complaining about
right,
it.
Yeah.
We'll do our part. We'll do our part. Try to help out during fiscal problems. But I have no complaints about the way the department is being run, the equipment that we have. Any of the, I would like to just make sure that that our levels stay somewhat sustainable. I hate to see us, through attrition, lose a lot more positions.
Yeah.
I think that our department, anyone who's ever been over there and has seen the operation knows that almost everybody wears, two hats, sometimes three, sometimes four. It's when the guy has to ride his motorcycle and pick up his dog to get onto the boat so he can get to the helicopter.
Yeah.
But, there's guys who do, usually everybody in the specialized unit also has a primary assignment.
Mm-hmm.
That's my point to that. A guy with, except for the few, like the aviation guys,
yeah.
You don't want a guy who only does that part-time.
Right.
I think falls out of the sky and it's the end of the aviation.
Yeah. So. One of the things that kind of, raised my attention when you started right out with the detectives. I can recall as chairman of public safety and then later on being over and my sense of the operation with respect to the detectives and specialized central services was that the files, the cases were, I mean, it was mountains of stuff, and it didn't seem to me to be enough people to do it when times were good. And I have to, I commend you for being sensitive to what everybody's trying to do to try to get as much out of budget dollars as possible. But I can also understand your concern for not wanting to see the complement drop. Because it raises the question, how are you going to accomplish the work? And in particular, in an area where you have a limited number of detectives to do the work that's in front of them in the first place, and to think that you may have to work even down from that number is that's a challenge.
Right. I mean, you know, some of the detective positions, you know, if you don't find the burglars quick, maybe that's not so bad. You know, the only thing is maybe you could have stopped another burglar.
Yeah.
When it comes to, you know, the warrant unit and trying to apprehend felons, you know, I think you want to try to get them as off the street as quickly as possible. So having a full complement in there, I think, is important. And nothing is more important to me, you know, as far as what we do is the narcotics, because we're doing what other departments basically just can't do. I mean, you know, small departments can't have undercovers. I mean, it's a large undertaking to do a narcotics, you know, assignment. And, you know, our guys are always being requested. They can only do so much. And the more that are in there, the more you can do. And there's plenty of work to go around in Washington.
Okay. Marty?
Just a quick question. If I'm coming back to the overtime again. I know the commissioner told us he's got basically new policies. It's actually brought down, apparently, the amount of overtime. Everybody okay with that? I mean, you guys are working.
Listen, I'd rather they hire 40 more guys and not have any overtime. Tell you the truth. I mean, there's always going to be some overtime, but you know, I'm not trying to. You know, I don't think overtime drives our department. I think it's a necessity that, you know, that's there, and the county chooses. You know, whoever it is in the county who chooses, but the county chooses to work a little bit understaffed and then fill that void with some overtime, because it saves on the benefit packages and the training and you know, purchasing equipment for the officer. There are a variety of reasons why it's cheaper for the county to do it, and if that's what the county chooses, that's fine. But I mean, if they wanted to go out and hire the 40 or 50 guys so that there's no overtime, you're not going to get a complaint out of me.
But, you know, for the public's side, you know, every year it's
call us pigs.
Right, when I see between, I guess, corrections and public safety, they see these guys getting, you know, all this overtime and that.
Same thing happens in corrections. They choose to run understaffed because it actually saves them money. But then when the police officer or the correction officer or the plumber or the painter makes the money, you know, it's like, look at them, they're pigs. I mean, there's no way, two ways around it. You don't get the opportunity to have that whole argument in the paper or whatever, the Journal News. Or News 12, or whoever it is going to report, just look how much that guy made. And there's going to be no explanation. And I understand that.
It comes back on you, comes back on us, it comes back on us.
So that's why I say, if you want to hire the 40 guys, go right ahead. It'll make, you know.
Okay. Gordon, got anything?
No.
Okay. All right, good, Mike.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Yeah, no, we appreciate you coming in and sharing some of your thoughts with us. And, like I said, we're always ready to go to work and help you out with things that you know, the
last
officers
3 months,
need.
How many guys have you lost?
We lose about 10 a year, so you know, whatever that average would be. But I'm just thinking that we had one guy who left to go to medical school. We had another lieutenant and a police officer for sure left. So I would say over 3 months, maybe 3 or 4 guys.
So it's on par, no more.
So you weren't part of the whole retirement incentive package. That did not apply to you.
There was an officer that didn't apply to us.
Okay. All right. Let's, I'll tell you, that motion is in order.
Second.
Motion is second.
Bill, what do you want to do about these failures? Do you want to meet personally first or not?
Yeah.
Your time on Monday then.
This meeting is now adjourned.
Absolutely.
I'll be in another meeting on Monday.
No, I could do it Monday at 3.
Warm out of clay.
Yeah. Are you going to have another meeting, or is that going to be? Is there another public workshop?
Probably. Yeah.
Right. So we want to say 3.
All right. Why don't we do it 3 and.
That's one of the problems we run into.